This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many parents who work find themselves so squeezed for time, they're constantly exhausted and always feel they're not spending enough time with their children. My guest Richard Louv is up against this in his own family. He's a columnist for the San Diego Union. His wife is a nurse. They have 2 kids, age 9 and 3. Louv wanted to see how other families were dealing with the anxieties of contemporary family life. So over the course of 3 years, he traveled the country interviewing parents, children, and educators. His new book is called Childhood's Future, Listening to the American Family. I asked Louv to compare himself as a parent to the way he remembers his parents bringing him up.
First, I'm a lot more involved with my kids' life than my father was. But I think my family struggles a lot more with the issue of time than my family that I grew up with did. The studies have shown that leisure time and time with family has dropped about 38-40% in the last 25 years. And one study done in Pittsburgh showed that the average parent spends about 30 seconds in meaningful conversation with their child a day and about 4 minutes with their spouse. I thought that was kind of a ridiculous figure until I started timing myself and realized that it wasn't too far off the mark. And by meaningful conversation, that's different than just being in the house. So I think this issue of time is probably the most important difference. Also, the element of fear that I feel as a parent and many, many parents feel about what can happen to their kid out there. I think that's really changed the texture of childhood.
Well, let's start with time. You probably found this complaint, not having enough time, expressed by a lot of the parents who you spoke to around the country.
One single parent told me that, I'll read you what she said. She says, "When I'm cooking dinner, my daughter sits on the counter next to the microwave and we talk. When she's in the tub, I'll jump in and join her. And when I vacuum the house, I put her on the vacuum. She likes to ride the vacuum, and that's a time when we can talk. She never does only one thing with her child. She grabs any available talking time." I heard parent after parent describe this kind of, I came to think of these as time tricks that families play in order to get any good time with their kids. One of the things I found is that children and parents hate this phrase, quality time. One high school senior told me that she liked the time she spent better with her parents before they started calling it quality time. But again, as I said, parents also don't like that phrase.
Why not?
Well, it feels packaged. It feels like something they have to do. It feels like a should. It lacks the spontaneity.
Turns time with your children into a trend.
That's right. And it's part of the programming of childhood now. Everything has got to be organized and programmed. The less time we have with our children, the more likely it is, A, that we'll be afraid about their safety. The farther out of our control they are, we drive them far across town now to the doctor. We bus them to schools that are far away. We commute to jobs that are farther away than perhaps our parents did. So the more out of reach the parents feel that their children are, the more they have this sense of fear. I think this anxiety about what's happening to your child when he or she is outside of your control when you're at work is probably going to be one of the mental health issues of the 90s. I think it affects us as parents in ways that we don't even fully understand.
It means that there are a lot of other authority figures in the children's lives, too, even before they start school. You know, there's the people from the daycare center or even a nanny if you have care at home.
And a lot of these are commercial relationships. We have to remember that. We can have the best nanny or best daycare in the world, but, the daycare providers that I would interview brought this issue up. They said, look, we're hired help here. We can come and go. Parents need to remember that this is a commercial relationship.
Before we get any further, I think we really need to acknowledge that the difficulties parents face really depends on the economic class that they're in, and that every economic class has a slightly different set of problems.
I think that's true, but on the other hand, I was surprised as I went around the country, and I went into very poor neighborhoods and very affluent neighborhoods, And I was surprised that many of the same themes would come up that transcended geographic or economic boundaries. The kids in the wealthy schools talked with the same sense of despair often about their missing their parents, that their parents aren't in their lives very much, as did the kids in some of the poor schools. Now, obviously, you know, a child growing up, as I've visited North Philadelphia and some of the crack neighborhoods there, has a whole different set of issues that he or she is facing. But there are common themes, this fear, this lack of contact, positive contact with adults, most of all their parents.
Richard Louv is my guest, and he's written a new book, which is called Childhood's Future. He's also a columnist for the San Diego Union. I think one of the reasons why such a common complaint on the part of parents is that they don't have enough time. One of the reasons for that is because often both of the parents work, or there's only one parent with the children and they work, you know, a single parent working. What kinds of discussions did you have with people about the conflicting demands of work and home? What are some of the typical examples people gave you of what they're up against?
One of the phrases that I heard over and over from parents is that we don't need two jobs. We need a job and a half. If only we could have a job and a half, then the stress would be less. Now, whether the husband took the half job or the wife took the half job was a different issue. But there is a sense that two jobs is just too much, and that you end up warehousing your child. You end up with very little real family life. Now, it doesn't mean that parents have a real good handle on how to deal with that. But I think there's a growing sense that obviously, two-career families are going to continue and should continue, but that there needs to be a different arrangement in the workplace that has much, much more flexibility than it does now. And that flexibility has to come in a number of ways. And you know, company daycare is probably the least of the important things that have to happen in the workplace.
One of the things that you propose is that employers give all employees a few hours off a month for them to be with their children, visit children in daycare center, or
yeah,
something similar to that.
Yeah, that's what I've proposed is something I call my family ties proposal, and I originally proposed this in a column as kind of fantasy legislation that I thought the state of California should require all employers to allow all employees, not just parents, but all employees, 4 hours in which they could drop in unannounced at their daycare. Or their elder care situation, volunteer in schools, visit the schools. The idea behind this came out of the McMartin trial in California, the daycare trial that went on for years and then resulted in very little. That proved one thing, that the courts are the worst place to police daycare. Who are the police supposed to be of daycare? Who's supposed to check on them? Well, in California, it's supposed to be every 3 years. But as it turns out, they just come in and look through the paperwork. So the idea is that parents would make the largest and most effective police force in daycare to make sure the abuse isn't happening. So allow parents to do that. Allow them to drop in unannounced. After I proposed this, I got an avalanche of mail from parents who wanted that, who wanted their company to allow them that flexibility. Again, dealing with this fear they have of what's going on with their kids outside the workplace. I got no letters at all from employers until the Southland Corporation called me. The Southland Corporation, as you know, owns every 7-Eleven in the world. And they have actually established something based on my idea, which they call their Family Ties Benefit, in Southern California for their employees. And in fact, I was talking to them the other day, and one of the employees had in fact gone to her daycare unannounced, sat there for 4 hours, and had decided her daycare was not a safe daycare and shifted her child to another one.
You know, one of the things I like about your proposal is that you suggest that people who aren't parents get an equal amount of time off, that this shouldn't be a benefit that only helps people who are parents, that all people should have time to spend with family or their equivalent of family.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about a parents' movement, and I'm all for a parents' movement, but I don't believe that it should stop there. I think if we, the minute we identify ourselves as parents in the workplace or politically as a special needs group, we probably will lose in the workplace and politically because we're a minority. And
really, you think of parents as being a minority now?
I think so. I can't remember the exact statistics, but it's parents are becoming a much smaller, have become a much smaller political group since the baby boom generation was born. In the workplace, you know, if I go into my boss and say, you're losing money because I'm anxious about my child and I need more flexibility, I'm going to immediately be tracked.
Right.
Whether I'm a mommy or whether I'm a daddy, I'm going to get on the mommy or daddy track if I do that alone. But if I do that with other non-parent employees who also have family needs, then my chances of winning that in the workplace grow substantially. You know, not all of us have kids, but all of us belong to some kind of family. And, you know, one employee may not have children, but they may have a parent in an elder care.
Of course, this kind of proposal of having employers give employees about 4 hours a month, I mean, now how would that help you, for instance? You're a freelance writer and a columnist. You probably, in a lot of ways, make your own hours, and I'm sure you're pretty hard on yourself, too, in the hours that you make. I mean, who's going to cut you a break there? You're going to give yourself the 4 hours?
Do you know what I'm saying?
For a lot of people, it's not even like their employer dictating that they have these conflicting demands. It's just the way their lives have worked out.
I know. Believe me, I'm dealing with that. I mean, going into the classrooms and listening to children talk about how they feel about childhood and their sense of almost abandonment certainly changed my parenting, changed who I am as a parent. Made me much more aware that I've got to be my own boss. I've got to take that time. So I have, and it hasn't. I don't pretend that this is easy. In a sense, parents need to re-educate themselves. It's not natural for us to take this time, given the current economic pressures. But we do need to volunteer in our schools. We do need to limit the amount of hours we work, and we do need to demand the kind of flexibility, not just from the workplace, but from ourselves to make that happen.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about parenting. My guest is Richard Louv. He's a columnist at the San Diego Union, and he spent about 3 years speaking with almost 3,000 parents, children, and educators for his new book, Childhood's Future, which looks at the problems facing families today. This is Fresh Air. Richard Louv is my guest, author of the new book, Childhood's Future. One of the consequences of parents working more is that often no one's home at the house when the child gets home from school. And this has been one of the reasons why there have been proposals to lengthen the school day. I wonder what you think of the proposal of lengthening the school day and also of lengthening the school year. I hear a lot about both of that right now, both of them.
I think that I have a problem with that.
With both the school year and the school day?
Yeah. That's the latest fad almost in educational thinking. How can we jam more factoids into these children? How can we wind up our little widgets and send them out to battle little Japanese widgets who spend their whole lives in institutional care? What I heard from children was the desperate need not for more institutional care, but for more family life. Just the opposite of more days in school. I think the most important educational issue today is not the curriculum, is not whether kids can do the new math or the old math or whatever else has come along. The most important educational issue today is the emotional health of children. They're not going to be given that by lengthening school year. I mean, there are some benefits to that in certain neighborhoods where it's unsafe for kids to be out and on the street, and you know, it may be better for some children, but for many of them, many of the children that I talked to, it was a litany of really missing family life and missing something else too that I call dream time. This overstructuring of childhood and the idea that children have to learn computers, they have to learn so much more than what we did as children in school, that they have to be economically competitive and all that. I think that there is a lot to be said for boredom in childhood. Anyone who has turned off the made the child turn off the television and the child gets bored knows how eventually, has seen how eventually the child finally picks up a piece of paper and starts drawing or makes something out of mud or sticks or something, finally starts to use their creativity.
With what you've said about schools of not wanting to see children's lives more institutionalized, you still go on to propose that schools expand their role in the community.
This is paradoxical, but I think that we're stuck with schools playing more of a role in family life. The question is, do we want schools becoming the family for children, which for many children the schools are becoming the family, or do we want schools that invite families in which families are a part of that school and the school is part of family life?
But the thing is, if parents don't have time to spend time with their children in their own homes, how are they going to have the time to go to a school when the school becomes more of a community center? And if they did have the time, wouldn't they rather just stay home with their kids?
It's a good question. The first part of the answer is the company is going to have to allow us time to do it. And we're going to have to take time to do it. Unless one of the spouses goes home and stays there full time, the school is going to play much more of a role in the children's life. We've got a choice. We can play a greater role as parents in that school, or we can allow the school to be the family for our kids.
So tell me some more about the kind of role you'd like to see families, parents play in the school.
I'd like to see a lot more adults, whether they're parents or not, working in the schools. One of the schools that I visited in Seattle, for instance, had a senior center outside the grade school. And for 10 years, there was virtually no interchange between the seniors and the kids, until one enterprising librarian established a senior mentor reading program. And now those seniors sit with the children with their arms around the kids and teach them to read. And the point of this story is not literacy. The point is positive adult contact. It can come in many forms. It doesn't always have to be the parents. I think that parents should be volunteering in schools more and should be encouraged to do so. A lot of teachers are actually threatened by parents volunteering in the schools. Colleges very seldom, if ever, talk about how to deal with parents. There's a feeling among some teachers that if you allow parents into the classroom, you're less than a professional. But in actuality, when teachers, in those rare occasions, are taught how to do this, they actually feel more professional because they're dealing with two generations and they know how to do it.
Richard Louvre is my guest, and he's a columnist at the San Diego Union and also author of the new book, Childhood's Future, which looks at some of the problems facing families today. We've heard a lot in the past decade from politicians about family, but do you think that the government has done anything to help family situations, and what would you like to see the government doing that it's not?
No, I don't think the government has done much to help families at all. One example is single-parent families. Reagan tried to reduce the likelihood, for instance, that single-parent household would include other adults. At one point, officials even discussed reducing the level of allotments for households in which a grandparent joined the single-parent family. Even though the studies show that the presence of any other adult in the household, any other positive adult in the household, brings adolescents under control levels that are comparable to single-parent families. But because of this traditional description of what a family is, single-parent families, which are growing in number, got no help whatsoever from the Reagan administration. As to what the government's role should be in the future, first we've got a problem, which I call the fundamental divide, which is two different groups, cultural and political groups in the country, that define family values totally differently. What I call the high-tech modernists and the nostalgic traditionalists, they're not even speaking the same language about what family values are or even what a family is. And until they begin to talk to each other and try to find a synthesis, not much is going to happen in terms of legislation. as far as what I'd like to see happen. I'd like a mix of liberal and conservative solutions at the government level. I like the conservatives' idea of increasing the tax deduction for families. This would most of all help single parents. I'd like us to move away from the idea of daycare per se and toward family centers in which family members, including grandparents, are invited in to help so that it becomes more of a link in this new web. Most of all, I think what we need to do is move toward this synthesis of traditional and new definitions of family and not get caught up in this left versus right debate, which isn't doing families any good at all. We're in a stalemate at this point.
So you're saying that you'd like to see the definition of family broadened to what families actually are nowadays?
That's right. Children have already broadened that definition. When you talk to them, they define families as groups of people who love each other. You know, they don't talk about, you know, a family to children that has a mom and a dad and two kids that doesn't love each other. To children is not literally a family, to small children when you ask them this. So we need to broaden the definition of family and make extended families of whatever shape more viable and supported by government programs, rather than continuing with this very narrow definition of what a traditional family is, which actually only existed for a few years during the Leave It to Beaver years.
After writing this book, you and your wife decided you wanted to make some changes in the amount of time that you spent with your children. And one of the changes you write at the end of your book is that your wife, who is a nurse, cut back to 16 hours of work a week and assumed a more traditional role at home. Why was that the solution, and why was it her and not you who cut back on the number of hours devoted to work?
Well, that's, you know, like all families, we faced, or many families, we faced an economic issue. I mean, I don't think it's particularly fair or right that as a writer I make more than she does, and she's a nurse practitioner and saves lives. I write words, she saves lives. But the economic fact was that unless we wanted to sell our house and rent somewhere, then that was what we were going to have to do economically. There's also a certain amount of wiring, social wiring, that goes on where no matter what words come out of our mouth politically, other voices inside of us that we grew up with are pretty loud. I'm not saying that's the ultimate or that should work for anybody or everybody. I'm saying that's what worked for us for a while. Now, I made some changes, too. I worked at home more. I did some, you know, real effort into volunteering in my son's school more, those kinds of things. But she took the brunt of it. That's beginning to change now. She's starting to go back to work more hours, and we're right now in the midst of reorganizing our life, and I'll let you know how we work it out.
Richard Louv, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Richard Louv is a columnist for the San Diego Union and author of the new book Childhood's Future, Listening to the American Family. Next time, astronomer Carl Sagan. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.